And good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning in for another show, John Kirkland. This is a pretty cold morning this morning, so I hope everybody has their jackets on. I guess I'm over here in the valley instead of the inland. I live in the inland, so this is the valley, so it's pretty cold. Anyway, a lot of topics I want to get into today. First off, we're going to start with the NFL. I want to say congratulations to the Titans running back, Derrick Henry. He agreed to a $50 million contract, 4 years, 25 and a half guaranteed. Well deserved. I thought he would get a little more than that, personally, in terms of the guaranteed money, but I think they were just trying to get something done before the deadline. They had to get something done before the deadline. So I thought that was a good contract there. You know, for him, he's well deserved it. Led the league in rushing last year. Incredible and fantastic season, because they actually went to the AFC Championship game, just came up a little bit short. So congratulations to them. The Browns signed Garrett to a record-breaking deal in terms of guaranteed money. He got $100 million guaranteed. For $125 million on a five-year deal. So, in other words, let me break that contract down. So, in other words, he got 5 years, $125 million, 100 guaranteed. So, that means that no matter what happens out of that $100 million, $125 million, he gets 100 of it guaranteed, no matter what happens. Whether he fulfills that five-year deal or not, guaranteed. So, I'm gonna switch gears here. I want to talk about this UFC thing. It's been on my mind since I went live here. Masvidal versus Usman. That was the big matchup last weekend. And for those that tuned in and watched the fight, it was a really good matchup. Actually, I want to say shout out to the UFC, because that was a great card. They were stacked from top to bottom. If you missed out on that, wow. I mean, that was one of the best UFC cards I've seen in some time now, but it was really, really good. Now, of course, Usman won. Masvidal took the fight on a short notice. Now, this is what made me mad. This is what made me mad, okay? Now, let's be clear. I'm not saying Masvidal is a coward, or I'm not saying, you know, he can't fight or he's not tough. I'm not saying any of that, because when it comes down to the UFC, you step in that octagon and you're fighting for a championship, you have to be tough. There's no such thing. That's impossible, to step into the octagon and not be tough. I get that part. But this is the part that I don't understand. You took the fight on a short notice, 6 days, and you lost. So your excuse is, Usman wasn't the better man that night. I just didn't have a full camp. To me, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And here's the thing. Had Masvidal won, we would not be having this conversation. We would not be talking about him not having a full camp. The reality of it is this. I understand why you took the fight. He's a competitor, a real competitor, because that's what competitors do. They're gonna take on all comers, and I respect that. I do. However, if your excuse is gonna be why you lost is because you didn't have a full camp, and you knew that when you accepted the fight on a short notice, that's a coward statement to me. Instead of just saying, "Look, I took the fight on a short notice. Usman was the better man tonight, but we are gonna get a rematch, and I'm gonna have a full camp. And I'm going to prove why I'm the man." I can accept that. But I cannot accept somebody saying, "I lost because I didn't have a full camp." Now you're disregarding how good Usman is. Usman showed me something last weekend. He showed me something last weekend. And the reality of it is this. Not only did I thought you lost, but so did the judges. You lost. And I think that people built this guy up to be whoever people thought he was. And the fact is that He's a great competitor. Great competitor. The man can fight. There's no doubt about that. I'm not. See, and I think this is where, you know, this is where my statements were taken out of context. I'm not doubting what Masvidal can do. I'm not doubting that because he's proven that up until Usman. He's proven that. But at the same time, for me, it's when you go up against the best, I need your best. I'm looking for your best. I can't even have a conversation with somebody if I didn't even see their best. Now, if that's not your best, then say, hey, I could have did more, or hey, I didn't do this, or I didn't do that, or whatever it is. But I just didn't like that. I didn't like that excuse, if you will. Didn't like it at all. So I think Masvidal will get the immediate rematch. And I would like to see that match again. And if Masvidal does not win, I want to know what the excuse is after that. I want to know what the excuse is after that. Because once a person gives you an excuse the first time, they're probably going to have another excuse the next time. I remember when Conor McGregor lost to Diaz. Conor McGregor took that loss. He didn't give no excuses, none of that. He knew Nate Diaz was the better man that night. Diaz found a way to win. He found a way to get the job done. So McGregor knew that. So what did McGregor do? He came back. He came back and got the job done. And it's okay. You're not, if you think, a great man once told me, if you think you're going to win every fight, it's not going to happen. It's going to be that one moment in your career where somebody wants it more and they kick your butt. Period. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. It happens. It even happens in boxing. It even happens in boxing all the time. It happens all the time. But we're going to move on to the NBA. And I kind of want to get into the NBA a little bit. Number one, I keep hearing about Jordan. I keep hearing about Kobe Bryant, right? And I keep hearing about LeBron. And I keep hearing about comparisons. And to me, it's like, how do you compare players and they come from different eras? You know, the game has, I keep telling people all the time, the game has evolved since Michael Jordan was playing. The game has evolved. The game has evolved since Kobe Bryant. The game has evolved since LeBron, because LeBron's been in the league more than 10 years. So the game has evolved a lot since then. So I want to get into this, and I'll probably spend a good portion of my show this morning getting into this because I want to put this to bed as well. Number one, Michael Jordan. Think about that draft. Think about that draft. Think about how Sam Bowie was drafted by the Magic over Michael Jordan. Think about that for a minute. And when you think about that for a minute, it makes sense. Because no one thought Michael Jordan, when he came out of North Carolina, nobody thought he would be that good or make an immediate impact on the Bulls like he did. No one thought that. No one thought that. Not at all. Not at all. I didn't think that. But Michael Jordan made the game look so easy. So easy. They don't even make players like that anymore. And quite frankly, the game is not as easy as Michael Jordan made it seem back then. Then you look at Kobe Bryant. Kobe Bryant has been working and working and working since he got into the NBA, since he got into the league. He's always working. He's always working. For 20 years, he's always working. Now, when you talk about work ethic, I haven't seen, and I'm not saying there's no players. Let me be clear. I haven't seen nobody work like Kobe. Because the reality of it is this, is that he wanted to win. And the fact is, he's got five rings, five championship rings. And it's like, how many people, how many players have worked just as hard as Kobe Bryant and still don't have a championship? Still don't have a championship. And I will, and I will add to Kobe's defense here is that there were some years where they didn't win. There were some years where they didn't qualify for the playoffs. And they said he couldn't get it done without Shaq, and he got it done. He did it twice. So to me, Kobe Bryant's had a remarkable year. But when you compare Michael Jordan to Kobe Bryant, I don't think it's fair. I think because it's two different eras. Now, there's a difference between comparison and there's a difference between similarities. Now, if you want to talk about similarities, sure. Because when you talk about Michael Jordan, you're talking about Kobe Bryant. Yes, they're both similar. Their games are like patent. It's like identical. But then when you talk about Kobe versus LeBron, that's a different story. Now, the only difference between Kobe Bryant and LeBron James is that LeBron James can play all five positions. There was one player who could play all five positions back in the day, and that was Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson could do that. He could play all five positions, and he had to when Kareem went out, got hurt. He had to play all five positions, but so did LeBron. Does LeBron play all five positions? No, but he could, and he has, and he did it a couple times with the Heat. I've seen it. So, so when you talk about LeBron James and Kobe Bryant, there's no similarities at all. There's no similarities. Now, in terms of who do you want to have the ball in the fourth quarter? The game is on the line between Kobe and LeBron. I'm going with Kobe all day long. I'm going with Kobe all day long. And it's no disrespect to LeBron, but the reality of it is this. When you talk about closers, we've seen Kobe do it time and time again. We've seen it. You go back to the tapes, you go back to all these things. I mean, you know, Kobe's been closing it out. Now, if you say, who are you going to give the ball to in the fourth quarter, and it's out of Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, I'm going with Michael. All day long. I'm going with Mike. That's just the bottom line. Now that's if you're going to go through one or the other or whatever. Now, in terms of point guards, I liked Isaiah Thomas. I did. I liked Isaiah Thomas. Okay. And I liked Gary Payton. And I think before the documentary came out of The Last Dance with Michael Jordan in it, I think a lot of people didn't even realize, or even they might have forgot. I'm not saying nobody remembered. I'm just saying they might have forgot that GP was Defensive Player of the Year at one particular time. But when I said earlier about how the game has evolved, if you think about it, there hasn't been not one point guard besides maybe Patrick Beverley. I believe he won it a year or two. I at least know he won it once. Besides Patrick Beverley, nobody's won it at the point guard position. Because, I mean, I remember Ben Wallace winning it. I remember Dwight Howard winning it. And these are all big men. But my point is that at the end of the day, the game has evolved. You never really see point guards getting triple doubles. Back in the day, you were lucky if your big man had a double double every night. Now point guards are getting like 10 rebounds a game. I'm like, what? And you don't see that. You didn't see that back in 92, 93, 94. You didn't see it because you had Charles Barkley or you had David Robinson or you had Shaquille O'Neal or you had, you know, Alonzo Mourning. You had some of the big men that did the work. They did the work. So that's how much the game has evolved. And that's why I said at the beginning of my show is that the comparison is not the same, but the similarities, yes, it is the same. It is the same. When you talk about the best big man, I heard Charles Barkley say this many times. When you talk about the best big man in the game. Now, I would say this. The best big man in the game that I've seen since 85. I would have to say Hakeem Olajuwon all day long. And I say that for this reason. One, he got his rings. Number two, he was the most finesse center I've ever seen. Just his drop step, and then he's able to come back to the rim, lay it up with his left hand. I've seen him do some wild things at the center position. And to me, since 85, he's arguably the best big man I've seen in terms of that. Now, when you talk about the most dominant center ever in basketball, that's Shaquille O'Neal. That's Shaquille O'Neal. Here's the thing. If you think about it, and when I say ever, let me be clear about this. And I think people, I had made a statement about context and clarity, is that there was no center then or even now more physical than Shaq was. If Shaq wanted to, Shaq can dunk on you all night long. Shaq could get to the basket anytime he wanted to. And there was nothing you could do about it. I've seen it. I've seen it in his younger years, and I've seen it in his prime years. That's the crazy part about Shaquille O'Neal. That dude, I'm telling you right now, I mean, just what he was able to do in the paint and against some of the best big men in the league. When you talk about Garnett, you talk about Alonzo Mourning, you talk about Hakeem Olajuwon, just things he could do was a trip. And I will say this, and I know some people might disagree with me, but in terms of rebounding at the power forward position, I know people think, you know, Charles Barkley is a jerk, but Charles Barkley could shoot the perimeter shot, and Charles Barkley could rebound. Charles Barkley was pretty good at rebounding. He'd go up there and get the ball. He was tough. He was, especially with the Suns. I think his best years were with the Suns. I mean, he could play some ball. And the Suns at one particular time were exciting to watch. I think at that time when Charles Barkley was playing really well, he had some good years there. Him and Kevin Johnson, they had some good years. Some very, very good years. I remember when they beat Utah and got to the finals. And Michael Jordan used them up. But they had some good years. They had some very good years. I think this is another name that I think has been swept under a mat. Larry Johnson. Larry Johnson, the Charlotte Hornet years? Oh, man. I mean, it was no joke. I think in terms of power dunking, after Dominique Wilkins, in terms of power dunking, I would say Larry Johnson and Sean Kemp. Those guys were, I mean, the rim was coming off with those guys. Oh, man. That's why I say in terms of evolvement, the game is not even played like that anymore. So those were that were able to see a Sean Kemp, Gary Payton, Larry Johnson, Alonzo Mourning, all those guys, it was a blessing. Then you talk about shooting. Now, I know some people are going to talk about Larry Bird, and I know some people are going to bring up Stephen Curry. Now, those that bring up Stephen Curry is because this is the era. Now, they're not going to bring up the people before Stephen Curry. Now, there were people who could shoot, right? There were people that could shoot, but this was before Stephen Curry got in the league. I think we're forgetting about the three-point shooters that were there. At one particular time, Dan Marley could shoot threes. But I'll tell you this right now. Dale Curry was hitting threes when I was coming up. Dale Curry played for the Charlotte Hornets. I remember that. And he was on that same team, I believe, with Larry Johnson, Wingate, Lonzo Mourning. He was on that team. And they were tough. If you talk about having to go to Charlotte on the road in the playoffs, playing against a team like that, hungry, looking for that W, that was a tough win. That was a tough victory if you were able to go into Charlotte at that particular time and get it done. But my point is this. Dale Curry could shoot. Dale Curry could shoot. I mean, long distance. He could shoot. He could knock it down. Larry Bird, I think the problem with Larry Bird was that when people knew that Larry Bird could shoot, in terms of maybe I want to say the era between maybe the kids that were born, maybe 89, between 89 and 94, I think that's when people realized, oh, shit, Larry Bird can shoot. You know, but I think it's like people didn't realize that. And then he had that chronic back issue that retired him, unfortunately. But Larry Bird was tough. Larry Bird was tough. So was Magic Johnson. So was Magic Johnson. Magic, now you talk about passing. The best big man in terms of passing. I believe Magic Johnson was about 6'8", 6'9", something like that. Magic Johnson was one of the best passers I've ever seen. That man can look directly at you with his head turned to the left and throw the ball right back to the right for Kareem for the jam. That's why they were Showtime. It was crazy. It was unbelievable. But that's, you know, but you don't see passing like that anymore. The finesse passing, rather. You don't see it anymore. That's kind of my take in terms of the old school, if you will. But I will say this, though, just to clarify things. The best rebounder, the best athleticism in terms of athleticism, rebounding and everything else across the board, 100%, and that's all he could do. The best rebounder I've ever seen since 1985 was Dennis Rodman. He will dive in your popcorn for that rebound. Oh, man. There was nothing like it. So that's my opinion as far as that is concerned, as far as the old school. Now, the new school, in terms of shooting, the best shooter right now in this league, right now, at the moment as we're talking, it has to be Steph Curry, hands down. Steph Curry, his footwork, the off-shot balance, the consistency, the rotation, the best shooter in our league right now. Well, in the league, in the NBA right now. He's the man, no doubt about that. As far as if you have a draft, who are you taking number one? So this is my question to all my listeners out there. If you had a draft today, you got the number one overall pick out of all the players right now, who are you taking? I can tell you exactly who I'm taking right now. Right now, the person I'm taking is LeBron James, period. Hands down, I'm taking LeBron James right off the bat. That would be my number one pick. Why? Because I know what I'm getting out of LeBron James. I know what I'm getting. That would be my number one pick. Now, I know Kevin Durant's going to be off the board. James Harden's going to be off the board. I know that. So my number two pick would be, it's interesting, but my number two pick would be Westbrook. That would be my number two pick. Now, I know some of the other top players are going to be off the board. My number three pick would be Klay Thompson. That would be a guy I'm taking right off the rip. That's who I'm going to take. My number four pick, who I would take, and this is a draft. I'm just drafting right off the top of the dome. I don't have a full list in front of me. I'm just thinking about players I would take. I know Carl Anthony Towns would be off the board. So I know that. I know he's going to be off the board. But I know you need a center and you need a power forward. But I see the Warriors do it all the time where they're going to get another forward or they would get, you know, whatever. But at center, at power forward, I would take Blake Griffin. And I would take Andre Drummond. That's who I would take in my draft. If I had to start a team, I'm drafting LeBron James, Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Blake Griffin, and Andre Drummond. That's exactly who I would take because I understand that Carl Anthony Towns is going to be off the board. I understand James Harden is going to be off the board. I understand Stephen Curry is going to be off the board. And I almost took Kyrie Irving, but I know Kyrie Irving's going to be off the board. I know Kevin Durant's going to be off the board. So I knew that. So that's kind of who I would take in terms of if I had to start a team. So my question, again, to everyone is, if you had the number one pick and you're starting a basketball team, who are you drafting as your starting five? Who are you starting as your five? So that's my question. For the week. Real quick, on a more serious note, before we close the show, is I want to talk about this pandemic. I want to get into some serious news here, current events and things like that. But before we get into this pandemic, I want to talk about Nick Cannon. The internet's blowing up about him making a comment, didn't sit well with Viacom. From what I'm hearing, they asked him to apologize. He wouldn't apologize based on his beliefs and what he believed in, and they went on ahead and fired him. Now, there's two ways of looking at it. Some people feel he was right. Some people feel he was wrong. To me, I feel like this. This is my true opinion, and I believe that it makes perfect sense. I'm not saying that Nick Cannon was right or wrong. I'm not saying that. I do believe that it is your constitutional right to state your opinion and you can feel any kind of way that you want to. It is your constitutional right, and I think he exercised his constitutional right, which put him in a position whereas some people feel he was not wrong for what he said. Now, I do believe a person of his caliber, his platform, he's a star. His name carries weight. So a person in that position, I feel like you have to be careful of the platform and what you use your words and how you use them. Because, again, maybe the way he meant it wasn't the way people perceived it. It's all about perception. It's all about what you thought maybe you heard or what you got out of what he's saying. So he was entitled to his opinion and he exercised his constitutional right, which he's entitled to that, to his opinion. You can't take that. Now, in terms of racism and all of that, nah. I do believe at some point Nick Cannon will review what happened. And I believe that he will take better steps in the right direction in which he uses his words and how he projects his opinion on certain things. But a lot of people, it's not just Nick Cannon, but it's a lot of people who do the same thing. A lot of people who say certain things about racism and just different, you know, things that go on in our society and in our world. So is Nick Cannon wrong? No, I don't think Nick Cannon's wrong. I do believe he was wrong in the platform, in the way that he said it, in terms of how he used it on his platform. But he's not wrong for his opinion. He's entitled to it. So I don't think he's wrong for that at all. So I think he's wrong in the aspect of the way he did it on the platform, not necessarily his opinion. No. No. I don't. Would I would have fired him? No. I would not. Not at all. Because for one, he was on his podcast. Now, if he did it on the show, I can understand why, you know, Viacom would say, CBS will say you're fired. I can understand that. But I can't understand you're doing this on your show, your podcast, because you can say whatever you want on your podcast. So that's my opinion on the Nick Cannon issue. Now, I looked at my timeline, and I gotta talk about this too. And this has been brought up to me too, is the Will and Jada thing. Now, I respect Jada Pinkett in terms of the table talk. I think it's a great platform. I think it gives people insight on, hey, just because I'm in the spotlight, I'm still a regular person as well. Will Smith, I give him a lot of credit. I have a lot of respect for Will. Just, you know, because the thing about Will and Jada is that you can only assume, unless they come out publicly and want you to know something about their life, you can only assume. You can only, whatever, go through tabloids, TMZ, whatever, and whatever story they come up with, that's what you're going to believe. But I give them a lot of credit because they're putting everything out there. They're putting their life out there. I'm not doing that, but they're going to do it. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, it takes a lot of guts to do that. It takes a lot of guts in front of millions of people to tell your truth and who you are. And if you don't respect Jada Pinkett after that, you are out of your mind. You are out of your mind. And the woman is taking the backlash with it at the same time. To me, that's guts. Same thing with Will Smith. That's guts, man. You know, that's just my opinion. Now, I would never do what they're doing, but that's why they're who they are. Because they're in that position where they're comfortable with whatever's transpired and they're coming to light. Now, I feel like people are taking the purpose of them talking about their life. I do believe that they're taking that out of context. I think that you can always learn from certain things that they talk about if you take it in the right context. I think anything juicy, people will take it and run with it and make it this big old thing. I seen it, this big old thing on my social media where they were talking about entanglement. Everybody was making a joke about that, entanglement or whatever. To me, I think that was just juicy for the people and they felt like they needed to take it. But I feel like people are taking her show out of context. I think she said some positive things about just any topic that she talks about, even her guests, you know, that she's had on the show. I believe that, you know, there were some positive things out of that. And I think that, you know, we could all learn from that stuff, you know, but you only learn from what you take out of that. So I kind of just wanted to kind of touch on that. And last thing, I wanted to touch on the pandemic. I think we're still not understanding about wearing your mask. People, we have to be safe. We have to be safe. As you can see, schools are shut down. Restaurants, everything that entertains us in terms of bars, movies, all that stuff is shut down, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll tell you this right now, we're starting all over again. People are losing their jobs, homes. So let's be safe out there. Wear your mask. Let's be safe. Get your children masks. We cannot afford this. We cannot afford to continue to start back at ground zero again. We can't do it. So let's be safe out there. Also, I want to take a shout out to my boy, man, Sante Holland, man. He's out there protesting. I've seen him. A tremendous artist. I want all my listeners and everybody who listens to the show, check out his music. One of the most talented underground artists I've ever heard, even then and now. This young man has tremendous, tremendous talent, creativity. He can do it all. He can do it all. I've seen it time and time again. But the one thing that I admire right now is that he's out there. He's out there in those streets. He's protesting. He's standing up for what he's believing in. He's pushing the ultimate vote, letting everybody know, hey, let's vote. He's up with the current events. He's really involved in the community. And you got to give him so much credit. And I just wanted to shout him out, man. He's an incredible guy. And it takes a lot of guts and time to do what he's doing, stand out there in the front line with the people. He's out there in San Jose, and he's out there doing his thing. So I just wanted to shout him out and let him know, man, hey, keep it up, man. I'm watching you work. I'm watching you work. So anyway, be looking for his next song. He's going to put out pretty soon. Look for that. It's going to be on all platforms, everywhere, Apple, Spotify, all the music platforms. So check that out. Well, I want to thank everybody, all my listeners, for listening this morning. You can listen to me every single day, Monday through Friday. It's going to be 5 a.m. Tune in and check me out every single morning, Monday through Friday, The John Kirkland Show. And we're going to go over just everything, news, sports, doesn't matter. We're going over everything. So check me out every single morning, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. Tune in. Thank you very much. You guys have a blessed day.